About 15 years ago, I sat in a little consultation room in Norwich having a chat with a mental health counsellor called Brenda. She was a very good counsellor. We sat there in a couple of armchairs and a kind of low coffee table between us. I remember there was a box of tissues on the, on the coffee table, and in case I burst into tears. And I had about four sessions with her. This was probably the third session. And she was helping me deal with some intense anxiety spirals. And on that day, we were talking a lot about grieving and how men can find it difficult to grieve, or how they generally can hold their emotions in quite tightly. And as we were talking, I mean, she was a very good help, actually. She was a very good help. But as we were talking, she said one thing to me. She said, yes, well, of course, my role is to try and, you know, help you get better so that you can go out and function as a normal member of society again. And as she said that, I kind of silently reflected to myself, yes, well, thank you, Brenda, for everything you've done for me, but actually, I've got a different project in mind. Actually, what I'm doing is questioning the core assumptions of that very society, and I'm looking for something different. And, you know, in a sense, that's a short answer to that question, why am I an order member? And that's what I did. I kind of went away and looked for something else. So what I'm going to do is just spend 20 minutes or so unpacking that, you know, that kind of reflective moment that I had and how I acted on it. So I've got four little kind of statements, if you like. And I'll just say a bit about each of them. So the first one is, most of my life I've been looking for an alternative vision of what a human life can be. When I say most of my life, what I think I mean from my teenage years, really. And some of that interest goes back, or was inspired by, you know, people I met and stories I heard of the generation from the 1960s, and especially the communities that were set up in the west coast of the United States, in California and Oregon. And, you know, and in turn, the what inspired those communities, I mean, they trace their roots back to, well, one of the roots is the German Romantic movement, or the kind of Enlightenment thinking, and 19th century Germany that Ari Abandi's got an interest in at the moment. But there was something about people coming together trying to do something different. Another one of the threads is actually the history of social rebellion in England. I mean, there's probably different variations in different countries, but I was particularly taken, and almost like I could locate what the order, our order, as in a kind of thread. I mean, the parallel doesn't always work, but for me, just reading about that history of social rebellion that goes back, say, even to the labour movement in the early 20th century and the late 19th century, about the Enlightenment thinkers in England, of philosophers like Jeremy Bentham, the movement of the diggers and the levellers, I don't know if any of you have heard of those, and their kind of egalitarian vision for rural communities. Even aspects of the Reformation, actually, and that kind of desire for your personal spiritual experience, you know, that wasn't mediated by a priest, and access to religious texts in your own vernacular. Even goes back, say, to what anticipated the Reformation, the Lollard movement, very kind of similar aspirations. Even goes back to, say, the Peasants' Revolt in England in 1381 with Wat Tyler. And the manifesto there wouldn't look out of place in a kind of 19th century communist manifesto of wanting wealth and power not to be just invested in a very small number of people, you know, to be shared a bit more equally. So, you know, I've very much been kind of inspired by these types of almost like groups that get written out of history. Most history we think of is like kings and queens, you know, but they actually have had an effect. I think they've helped to create the kind of society that we live in now, which is not perfect, but it's certainly, you know, there are qualities there that have been influenced by all of these kinds of trends and movements. So, you know, for me, they kind of, but all of those threads and others, they kind of gel around me questioning the sort of core values, as I said, and in our society. And there were two in particular, I think, that I always questioned. One of them was that the purpose of life is biological reproduction. And the second one is that the means to a better life is economic development or accumulative economics. So by the first one, what I mean is it's not a kind of an anti-family thing. It's just like I never wanted to place me having children so that my children could have children, so that they could have children, right at the centre of my life. You know, I'm very happy with the family that I grew up in. You know, in fact, having a good family upbringing, I think, is tremendously important to live a good human life. And friends of mine who haven't had that, you know, are really struggle. And, you know, I'm very grateful to my mother and my father and everyone else who had a hand in my own upbringing. But there's something about not overloading the family with things it can't deliver. And the second one, the economic development, this partly comes out of my work in human rights and third world development, but it was always for me, towards what end? What's the goal? Economic development never quite had anything. I mean, by all I know, it's made fantastic improvements in sort of healthcare and everything else, and given us a quality of life or a standard of living that is kind of undreamed of, you know, 100 years ago and so on. But even so, it's like, what is the purpose? You know, that was always a question for me. Towards what final goal is this? So, you know, in a sense, what I wanted to do was find others who weren't just complaining, which is what I ended up doing, getting very cynical and complaining about the government. I wanted to find people who were actually trying to live an alternative, to live an ideal. So, you know, this is my second point, if you like, that the order is the best I've found. And in fact, what I wanted, in order to just to sort of flesh that out a bit, what I wanted to do is tell you about two of Banti's teachings that have had the most effect on me. They're both teachings that are kind of Banti going back to the kind of, you know, early Buddhist tradition and then drawing something out and applying it to the circumstances we're in now. In other words, they're not just traditional Buddhist teachings. So, you know, what they are the what he calls the true individual and the new society. I mean, most of you probably have come across them or studied them, but they've both been really important to me. In fact, they still are. It's not as though I reflect on them every day, but I just know they're kind of one of these subterranean currents which have just, you know, they kind of keep me going, if you like. I mean, because they're actually embodied in people. I mean, that's the important to add, but they're two particular teachings. You know, when I was thinking of these, this morning, I just kind of came up with these words, that they're important to me because they give me perspective, inspiration, relief, methodology and purpose. So I just want to give a few of Banti's words on both of them, because it always just like fires me up when I read that they're both, you can find them both in What is the Sangha, his book. But on the true individual, Banti suggests that we ask the question, am I an individual or a social unit? This is, at bottom, the central question of our personal lives, and it's one we need to keep asking ourselves and keep trying to penetrate more deeply. And then he goes on to give this, to me, great list of qualities that such a person would look like. So the first one is free of group conditioning. I'm not going to explain them, I'm just going to read them out. The second one is a person who is no longer submerged in the species, as Banti puts it. The third one, someone who has developed self-conscious awareness. And then someone not psychologically dependent on others. And then someone who is able to accept that they might be unpopular. Someone who is developing emotions that are positive and refined. Someone whose energies flow freely and spontaneously. Someone who recognises that they are fundamentally alone. And the last one, possibly the most important, someone who encourages others to be individuals in their own way. It's a great list. And then he, in talking about the new society, he says it's made up of these true individuals. That's what it is. That's what the new society is. and it's designed to allow people to develop as human beings. That's it in a nutshell. That's the purpose, if you like. I find that very interesting because, you know, the application, if you like, of that principle might be communities, it might be, you know, what we call our team-based right livelihoods, it might be working at Buddhist centres, but in fact they're applications, so they might come and go. You know, the principle is like if whatever makes a human being grow or helps them to grow. That's the principle. That's what you have to keep coming back to. So, and he says, he goes on to say, it will not try to do for people what they can only do for themselves, but it provides facilities, opportunities, and an environment of encouragement, as well as a social and spiritual context of human fellowship, which makes it easier for people to develop as human beings. Mm. In fact, he goes on at the end of that kind of section there. He says somewhere near the end, in the old society, most of its members are not interested in human development. He says, you know, he puts it as strongly as that. So, yeah, those two teachings, I find them so inspiring. I find them that actually there are people trying to live them out. On the other hand, and my third point, and Aryabhandi mentioned this, as did Dharmadipa last night, the order is not ideal. I think it's such an important point to bear this in mind, and I want to say something about that. It isn't perfect. You know, we are all not perfect. Bhante isn't perfect. You know, we're all human beings. We're all flawed in a certain, you know, level. And many of the things that go on in the world, you'll find some form of in the order. Aryabhandi mentioned a few. You know, there's deceptions and rivalries, competitiveness, confusion, anger, impatience. You know, they all happen. They all go on. And even sometimes the language that we use in the order, some of the language I use right now, creates kind of boundaries between who's inside and who's outside. So I think there's a really important point, and that is that, you know, you, me, us, will be judged by those ideals. Whenever you set up an ideal and how important it is to do that, but then you'll be judged by it. That's what happens. That's almost inevitable. I mean, what I found quite surprising, maybe I shouldn't, but is that sometimes the judgments are made with such a vehemence, in other words, such a strength, that I'm sure people don't make judgments in any other arena of society, even in their, you know, or especially their own lives, you might say. It's almost as if, you know, in noticing the flaws, say, in our order, it's almost too easy just to reject the whole thing, to reject the whole project. You know, they're just no better than anybody else. And I think the issue here is that, although it is important even for us, you know, or maybe especially for us to kind of relate where we are and how we are together to this kind of vision of what an ideal society might look like, it's also really important to look the other way and just to kind of remind what goes on. I mean, I know the environments I worked in, they're actually reasonably good compared to what most people do, and yet they were still full of, like, not very skillful behaviour, quite frankly, including my own. And I think that when you're doing that measuring, you know, it's really important to measure against the ideal, but just to measure against where you've come from. And actually, my view is that the order is several notches above anything else that I've come across. And at its best, it really flies. You know, it's not always at its best, but at its best, it's really, you know, it really goes somewhere. So, and the final little statement, if you like, is that the order gives me a continuing sense of purpose. About 6 months ago, I had a kind of little reflective reverie where I thought to myself, actually, I'm living the life I always dreamed of. That's what I, you know, it just sort of came to me. It's not to say that my life is always easy or even always enjoyable. You know, living here, it seems quite intense sometimes, seems a bit overwhelming, never have time to assimilate things. And yet, I could say that with a kind of free heart, I'm living the life I always dreamed of. I think what I mean by that is with other people, I can make a connection to a clear vision in my daily activities. There's a lot of scope and freedom in my work. I work really hard. I really enjoy it. I don't have to judge myself, or I'm not judged against some kind of performance target. You know, I want to put in energy and effort. It comes from me. There's a lot of room for me to be creative and to encourage others to be creative. I get a lot of support. I have the chance to give support. I mean, it's, you know, it's really... I can't tell you how important those things are, actually. They're it's really, really good. And, you know, it all takes place in an environment where the kind of notion of human development is paramount. It's held up to be, if you like, the highest value above any kind of organisational or bureaucratic objectives. You know, that's what's... We put that first, as it were. What's best? So... I really like that. Another little phrase that came to me at the, just to kind of illustrate what I've just been saying, but another little phrase that came to me around the same time was, I was thinking to myself one day, well, now it's enlightenment or bust. And what I meant was that I'd given up the notions of financial security that I used to entertain. And there's something in that that I think is really important. Whether I've given it up for good, I can't say, but for the time being I have, and I've probably left it a bit late to do anything about that. I don't have a pension and I don't have any savings. And how I relate this to the order is that it's not something that I make a judgment about anybody else who does have a pension or who has savings or anything else. It's not that, and I don't think I'd even encourage anyone not to do what I do in a certain way. But what is really important to me is that I belong to an order where it's not seen as ludicrous for me to say something like that. And that actually it's even seen at best as a positive value. You know, that I'm not just thought that I'm kind of completely naive or you know, just kind of completely left field. So I find that, very... it kind of gives me a sense of freedom, I think, or something like that. I mean, this is, again, it's kind of almost incidentally, but, it's interesting starting just with that little kind of counselling story. Sometimes some of the kind of flavours that and views and so on that wash through our order, I mean, maybe it's very important that it happens, but that there's often kind of little fashions that go on, you know, like with non-violent communication or particular types of therapy or with focusing. And I think there's something of value in all of those things, and certainly as someone who's been through counselling, I found it very important. And in fact, I've done quite a bit of non-violent communication training. But there's something about the order which I really value, which is at its heart, it has a really coherent vision which is based on the transcendental. And it's like, that is what is really important. It can kind of... You know, the kind of applications which may go out into a kind of therapeutic world and so on, I think they're very valuable. But there's something I get a bit nervous, almost like the closer they get to the heart of the order. And I think that there's a really important stand to be made, if you like, just a kind of keeping a transcendental vision. So I think, at least as much as I'm able to say, those reasons are why I joined the order and why I'm still in it. I was saying to Padma Badger, didn't know this when he asked me, but I was saying to him the other day, I don't think I've ever thought about leaving. And I know, you know, some order members do. It's fine. I'm not trying to, say something that would be difficult for other people to hear. But I don't think I have. And I think it's because, you know, it's this kind of... Banti's vision is so kind of clear, and I was kind of so searching for it in so many kind of lost alleys that, you know, that even though, you know, the order is flawed, I don't think I've doubted it's the people in it, that there is a kind of integrity, that they're trying to do something meaningful in their lives. And this question, or this idea that there's fundamental meaning at the heart of it is for me the most important. So who knows? I mean, you can't say what's going to happen in the future. I can't say what my future is, but you know, it's most of the time I've been in the order, I've been at Padmaloka. It's a fantastic place to live. It's not always easy. I won't stay here forever. I've got a kind of strong nomadic urge in me as well. Hopefully, still to serve the order in one way or another. But it was lovely actually just to be given the opportunity to sort of think about that question, why I'm an order member, and perhaps I should do it a little bit more regularly. Thank you.